Indeed. At the beginning of 2009, Jonathan Starr was a successful hedge fund manager and the head of his own firm. By the year's end, he'd moved to Somaliland, a breakaway region of Somalia, and established an American secondary school whose students, against all odds, have come to achieve success beyond anyone's wildest dreams. To date, Arbazo has placed 40 graduates and counting in American universities, from Harvard to the MIT. Starr has much to teach us about creating and maintaining a successful education system, and their extraordinary successes challenges the misguided and ill-informed immigration debate raging across the world today. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, Jonathan Starr. Jonathan, good afternoon to you.
Nice to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. Now, Jonathan, 2009, you were sort of living a very comfortable existence. And, you know, some would say that, you know, you had it covered. You had your own successful hedge fund business. There's a certain thing about, you know, people in the financial markets not looking much beyond their bonus and their paycheck. And yet you had basically a life-changing experience that'll just flip the whole coin on its head. What happened?
Yeah, well, I never money is a nice thing because it allows you to do things. For me, it allowed me to do things I wanted, like not have to have a paid job for a while, and also to just feel safe and to be able to donate money to start this school that I started. So it never was about I never loved things. I never wanted things particularly. So one of the years when it early on in my hedge fund business, one of the junior partners at my firm had a baby stroller worth more money than my car. So it never was about that. I always wanted to do something different. And they're certainly moving to the other side of the world to a developing country was different. And it accomplished that.
Well, I mean, why Somaliland? Because, you know, you're based in the you were presumably in the States. Why didn't you, if you wanted to go somewhere different, you could have gone to, you know, do an inner city school project, or you could have gone to Central or South America. Why so far away to an area? And let's be honest about this, Somalia and the U.S. haven't exactly had sort of good relations over the past couple of decades.
Well, that is true. I have a Somali uncle who came to America in 1961 and met my aunt and had my cousins. So I grew up with them, and he, I mean, I'd always heard stories about his home country, and his home part was the former British Somaliland, which was a separate entity from the rest of Somalia. And they broke off and declared independence, and I went back with him and visited. And before the end of that visit, this was in 2008, I said, okay, let's do it. I'm going to move forward and create this school and see where it goes. So it was really having a personal connection. And also, you know, money can, if done right, money can go so much further in a place like that than it can in America. I mean, we've created and run the school for what's now about $3 million. Our students have gotten close to $20 million of scholarships to go abroad. I mean, $3 million in the States barely gets you a building. Mm. It gets you a small building. You know, never mind operate the school for 10 years, 9 years. So it's just, if done right, money in the developing world can go so much further than it can go in a place like America. Now, if done wrong, then the money gets completely thrown away and put into bad people's hands, and it's actually worse than if you didn't do it at all. But I was going to be on the ground making sure that didn't happen.
Right. I mean, what did your friends in the financial markets and then the hedge fund business say when you said, okay, guys, that's it. I've decided what I want to do, and they're thinking, okay, he's going to do a profits warning. We're going to expand, but I'm actually going to go and open a school in a place that most of you probably won't even know exists.
Yeah, I don't think my friends thought that it was actually going to happen. I mean, I think they thought that they'd see me 6 months later. I mean, one of my closest friends in the business just flat out said, like, this is nuts. You're going to come back. A couple of years later, we had our first students get just short-term scholarships to some American independent schools, private high schools. And at that point, my friends met these kids and they saw my connection to them, and they knew this was for real at that point. And they also, I think, started to see, in meeting the students, they started to see what it was all about and why it was so important.
Okay, Jonathan, paint me a picture here. It's day one. You've arrived in Somaliland. You've put your boots on the ground. You've been there before, but what is the infrastructure like in there? What did you have to bring in? How did you assemble your team? Did you have a right-hand man? Did you have security? Were the builders okay? Where did you get the materials from? All that sort of stuff. How did you go about it?
Yeah, I mean, it was... basically, you have to create everything. I mean, if you went to our school right now, we provide our own power. We truck in all of our water. We design our campus. There's really not an aspect of it. We provide. You can't just go to the company that outsources kitchens or libraries, bookstores, any of that. You just have to provide all of your own. So you have to figure the whole thing out. And really, it was the sort of thing that you piece together. You make a lot of mistakes and learn a lot on the way, but eventually you're running. It's like you're running restaurants. You're running because you have to feed. We're a boarding school. We have to feed teachers. We have to feed students. You're running restaurants. You're running a mini power company. You're running a water agency. And on top of that, you're also running a school.
Yeah.
So it's much more than when you're in a place like in a European country and you can just call the electric company and get yourself hooked up. You know, it's just not that way.
What's the infrastructure like down there? I mean, did they take kindly to, you know, an outsider coming in and saying, right, I'm here, I'm an extremely successful person from the US, and I'm going to set up a school, and here we go. And they must have thought, you know, who is this guy? And did they not get, did not the sort of the local government officials say, well, actually, you know, what do you think you're doing?
Well, it's a little bit more like the Wild West there. At least it was, it certainly was when I got there. So kind of each little area is independently kind of run and not completely run. There's a lot of foreigners, a lot of white people have come to a place like that saying they're going to do things before, and they do just go home. And people get used to the idea of let's take them for everything we can take them for in the meantime. So that certainly was an attempt to – people certainly tried their best on that. But what happened was that the students very quickly realized that all the foreign teachers I brought in, and we were so dedicated to them. And then their parents started realizing the same thing and that this was such a special opportunity. I mean, one of the parents told me later that she realized after 1 year her daughter had learned more than her other children had learned after all of high school. And it just – then the parents became on our side. And you slowly make allies and you try to get yourselves out of some of the bad connections that you unknowingly went into. So no, it's a mess, and it does not help that so much money has come in from foreigners over the years and just been for the taking. You know, just people who projects that never really were going to happen. They never were going to do much if they did, and people there just get used to the idea that like, just take what I can. You know, get anything you can right now. But I mean, at this point, you know, certainly, I mean, if you fast forward a little bit, so we went through some really rough times. And that's a lot of what I talk about in the book is these incredibly tough times where the local society rose up against us. But when their kids really started succeeding, they started getting the first scholarships to American universities. We think since the mid-80s, people in society just changed. I mean, they do. At the end of the day, people want good things for their children and for their nephews and nieces and for their country. And when they started seeing their kids getting these opportunities, as one parent told me, it went from people saying to her, why would you ever send your child to that school, to how do I get my child into that school?
You said it a bit earlier, it was a bit like the Wild West, and we think of the Wild West, you know, those desert landscapes, and we think about people running around with guns, and there's a bit of, I was flicking through the notes I had, and there was, one of your fixers said, oh, you know, we had an armed militia turn up at the gates this morning, because you talk about having sentry posts on the outside, and I'm not going to go on and make it sound as if it's a, you know, military operation, but you said, you know, and they came with the intent of killing you, the militia, but it's okay, I sent them away, and they're okay now. I mean, that must have been a quite sobering experience.
Well, I was used to it. It's not, and actually, first of all, everyone there has a gun, as far as I can tell. It's not like people just carry them around all the time, but it's I mean, this was a war-torn country where people were, there was a civil war that happened. I mean, and the guns don't just disappear. And we do have armed guards. We have 13 feet high walls with razor wire around. I mean, we certainly do our best for security. I mean, I think there have been people with a grip on society there who have had an interest in not seeing it change, not seeing it develop. But they're mostly bark. There's not a lot of bite. Mm-hmm. And I think people in society are starting to realize that more and more. So their tactic is to try to scare you. But if they don't succeed at that, yeah, it just they couldn't actually just remove us from there. And then, as I said, in time, society started to realize, wait a minute, this is really good for us. Like, our kids are getting this incredible opportunity. We have kids at Harvard and Yale, and why would we want to mess with this? You know, and we should go the other direction. We should try to encourage it. So, sure, you still have a large for-profit schooling industry, which I can tell you does not like our existence there. People have made a lot of money off of not teaching kids well. But the society as a whole doesn't really tolerate us getting a lot of grief anymore. They certainly were tolerant of it for a while, but it's stopped at this point.
Tell me, we talked about all the outside stuff. Tell me about the important stuff then, about, you know, the kids, the teachers. How did you attract the staff? Because were they locally recruited, or do you say to somebody, hey, I've got a great, you know, come over from the States, I've got a great place, we're going to all teach kids in Somaliland. They may be having rifles, it may be a war zone on occasion, but I'm sure it'll be a lot of job satisfaction. And also, how did you get, you know, how did you get the kids? How did you convince the parents to send the kids to the school? And was there an exam, or did they just come in? And, you know, tell me how that actually operated.
Yeah, so to start the school, it is kind of, I look back and you can look at all these things along the way and say, well, if that didn't happen, where would we be today? I'm not sure how we convinced the first teachers to come. That is really a bit of a mystery. We did not have an operating school yet. We didn't even have the facility ready yet. There were several bombs that went off in Hargeisa, the capital of Somaliland, in 2008. We were recruiting teachers for 2009. So I don't know how we got the first group, but we did. And from there, it just got a little bit easier every year. And then as our reputation built, I would never call it easy, but we have a staff almost entirely of foreigners. And and then the students is kind of the same thing. The first year, I think, to some extent, we got leftovers. You know, a lot of kids wanted to go to other schools, and then we convinced a small number to come. We got almost no girls the first year. But then you changed that. So the first year, we gave an entrance exam with the school that was considered the best in the country, and everyone was coming to it because they wanted to go to that school. But between us, there were only 19 girls who showed up. Now we do our own entrance exams. This last year, we had 600 girls trying to come to our school for seventh grade boarding. I mean, most parents in Europe and America don't want to send their children to seventh grade boarding. They say this kid's too young for it. So you can see how it's just changed dramatically. But in the early years, yeah, it was really just like, if you were interested in coming, there's a very good chance you'd be at our school as a teacher or as a student. Now we can be much more selective on both. But the key thing, it's not really about the input of who was the student. It was really about because no one in the country was at a high level academically, which if you spend any time in the developing world, and really, really, this is a broken education system, you realize that the kids who are being educated, they're not really being educated, not the way we think of in the developed world. So it really was just a matter of who was going to have the heart to put the effort in to really push themselves to become what they could become. And those kids thrived. So it wasn't, our entrance exam that first year wasn't even particularly predictive of who was going to be good. It was really just who put in, who had the passion, and who decided that they believed that if they invested every day in making themselves better, it was worth it, and they would ultimately go places.
Who had the passion and believed in themselves? There have been quite incredible stories coming out, including the boy from a family of nomads who took off on himself, and a girl who went on hunger strike to convince her parents that she should go to your school.
Yeah, I mean, they're these kids, there are tremendous stories from them. I mean, part of it is the kids with the most boring background stories still have a more interesting background story than 80-90% of people from the developed world, because they can, we have one family, the father has 30 children. 30. I mean, that's a lot of kids. That's a large family. You get someone like, I mean, the extreme case is nomadic kid. Yeah, he was a nomad. The first time he saw a truck in the distance, he thought it was an animal. He'd never even seen technology. And then he came to us in ninth grade, didn't know a word of English, but he was, I mean, superbly talented and also worked hard. And he graduated from MIT, and generally considered the best engineering school in the world, this past year, and he's now at a master's of engineering at MIT. So, I mean, he's come a long, long way. And yes, that's one of the more dramatic stories of success, going from not knowing what a car is to engineering school. But a lot of the students had some form of that, you know, just coming from tough backgrounds of one sort or another, and just scrapping their way ahead until they really had reached a place where they can control their future, which is where they're at now.
But you know, what was the reaction like when you said to your friends or to the education system, right, then, you know, we've got this school running, which is a pretty amazing thing on itself, and now I want the students to, because I think they're good enough to go up for the examinations for Harvard and the MIT. You know, those are two schools that are known worldwide. People must have thought, oh, come on, you know, this is really going too far.
Yeah, I don't think anyone believed it until they got in. So now people believe it. You know, now it's almost like, another Barso kid going to the Ivy League. And it's just, I mean, I'm excited. I'd like to think the society is excited, but no one's surprised anymore. They know how good these kids are. But no one believed it. No one believed they could get into any American school. I actually had one Somali say to me early on, when you say that your goal is to place these students in scholarships in American universities, that's when you said that, that's when I knew that you were a liar. You know what I mean? That's how ridiculous the concept was to people. It wasn't even plausible. And even, I mean, it was very interesting. Writing the book was interesting because I went back and talked to many of the parents and I could look at things from a different perspective. And one of our supporters, a parent who was also somewhat high up in society, and she was a huge supporter of us, throughout, she said to me, you know, to be fair, no one, including me, understood what we were talking about here. We thought the school was good. We didn't know our kids were going to be getting opportunities to go to the best universities in the world. We didn't know they were that good. You know, no one really understood. It was just too out of, it was, we think it's since the mid 80s, since something like this happened, since prior to their Civil War. And that's just, I mean, you have a young society. Most of society wasn't even alive in the mid-80s. You know, so I think it was too out of the question and out of anything they could consider possible to even believe it until it happened.
And I mean, the other thing is, and I'm not going to get tremendously political on you here, but, you know, it's a particularly interesting time, I think, to be an American at the moment, especially when you have a president whose basic view on Africa was something whole countries, and you're sending scholarships from probably one of the most whole continent to Harvard and MIT. What do you think that says about the potential that is out there and the way that perhaps, you know, the system is looking at the immigration?
Well, I mean, it's a whole issue, but I like our students to consider a few things and keep them in context. First of all, one person doesn't represent all of America. You know, people, it's and that's true of any country. And it's, of course, it's a complex place. And I would like to think that our students on the whole have been really welcomed into America. They've gone to schools that care for them, that have given them these incredible scholarships. I do think that a policy shouldn't give all of a country a bad name. It's not like everyone's for the policy. I also think that it's hard for me to believe that the administration in America actually would be against students leaving Somaliland, coming to America, going to American universities, then returning home and helping improve their country. How can that be not a good, how can that be a bad thing for America? And it just doesn't make any sense to me that anyone would believe that that's a bad thing for America. I mean, our students, our first, we've had our first graduates from American universities, and they're, except for Mubarak, who's doing the Masters of Engineering at MIT, the rest of them are actually back. Several of them are teaching at Abarso. These kids are passing on the education they receive back in their home country. How can that not be something good for America? It just doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't, I really, you know, regardless of my political beliefs, I don't believe that even the most, the administration in America thinks that that's a bad thing. I just don't know that we're in the conversation when they come up with such things. But so far, our students have gotten visas, and I'm hopeful it doesn't change, because this is good for America. It's good for Somaliland. It's good for America. I think it's good for the world to have a more educated, developed Somaliland.
10 years ago, Jonathan, you were a fund manager. You know, 2008, where, you know, wind the clock back. And then here we are, 2018. You've got students going off to scholarships. You've got a school that is doing amazing things. Could you have ever imagined when you touched down there 10 years ago or 9 years ago that this was going to be the outcome and how many lives that you would have changed?
Well, I'm a pretty ambitious person. So to some extent, yes, I actually, this was my dream. But the part that I could, I mean, the thing that's so different about 10 years ago versus today, 10 years ago, sure, it was my dream, but there were no humans actually involved in my dream. You know, it was more like there were banners. You know, there was more like the idea of, oh, we'll send students to American universities and around the world. It wasn't that these people, Nimmo and Fatimo and these real human beings that I was thinking about, because I didn't know them. I hadn't started yet. And the aspect of, so to some extent, I did, this is what I hoped for. I didn't know the challenges we'd run into, that's for sure. But this is what I dreamed of having happen. But the fact that it actually happened for these kids that I got to know, who, by the way, started at a much lower level than I imagined they would start at. I mean, that made the whole challenge much more daunting when I actually met them and like, wow, I really adore these kids and their level is just awful. How are they going to get to where they need to get to? But having lived it was so much better than having dreamed it in this kind of non-detailed way that is the only way we can dream, because we don't have the details. We don't know the people.
The book is called It Takes a School, The Extraordinary Success Story That Is Changing a Nation. It's by Jonathan Starr. It's out now by Picador. Jonathan, if people want to find out about more about you, about the school itself, is there a webpage? Is there social media? I mean, presumably they can download the book from our own virtual website here at TRE.radio, but how can they find out more about you and the school?
Sure. They should go to Abarso School. Abarso is ABAARSO, school.org. There's a lot of information there. We had Anderson Cooper did a 60 Minutes piece about us. We've had New York Times articles. So there's a lot of information that's there, and you can link to it all through that site. So it's Abarso, which is ABAARSO, school.org.
Well, it's an incredible story. Jonathan, I've just got to ask you this. I mean, what's next for you? I mean, if this can happen in Somalia land, I mean, you've got to think, what on earth could, you know, what could people do all over the world if they just, you know, put their minds to it and just threw the preconceptions out the window?
I think that's true. I hope that, I mean, one of the reasons I wrote the book is I hoped it would inspire people to go do something similar where they get to know some place like a Somaliland, but they go to their place, whichever one that might be. For me, what's next is more and more and more in that country. That's where we have just a tremendous opportunity, because our brand is so strong in the country, because we have all these students who are coming back and they want to be part of developing their country. So I look now and I think, the opportunity. So this is what I never would have dreamed of 10 years ago. I dreamed of having a great school. I didn't dream that we would have the opportunity to really work from here and maybe be able to take further education steps in Somaliland that could really revolutionize the whole education level in Somaliland. And that's what I hope to see. And I don't think it's impossible. I think we actually can do it. And I do think someone else who decides that whatever country, you know, is the one that they're passionate about can do the same thing where they want to do it. They just need to completely dive into it, not look back, and just make it work.
The book is called It Takes a School. It's by Jonathan Starr. Jonathan, it's been inspiring and just incredible to speak to you today. Have a fantastic rest of your day, and we'll speak very soon indeed.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.